Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Thursday's programme. Welcome, welcome. It's Richie Allen with you for the next couple of hours. It's your call today. I will be taking your phone calls right soon. All the details are on richieallen.co.uk. That's where the Skype handle, name and the telephone numbers are, so check them out. Welcome. I did say welcome, didn't I?
Uncensored, unfiltered. You're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, and you can talk to me about anything, but I will ask you to be brief. I expect quite a number of calls to come in. Priority given to people we've never heard from before. If you've never phoned the programme or Skyped it, please consider doing so today. Any number of things. There are a lot of things we can talk about. I will be all ears, I promise you that. And just in case you can't be arsed because you're a bit lazy to go to the website, here are the details you need.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Oh, like I said, the details are on the website and on the Facebook page. Thank you very much, Roger. Thank you, Roger. Future Mrs. Allen grinning like a Cheshire cat today. She had a good night last night. That's because she had a night without me. She went into town to watch André Rieu, the Belgian violinist with his lovely perm. Have you ever seen him? He does these extravaganzas in Central Europe. He brings classical music to the masses. He took against snobbery. Many, many moons ago, he felt that classical music and orchestras were snobby. And he set out to do something about it. He is massive. And El Frogo is no mean musician herself, with a proficiency in the clarinet and the saxophone. She plays a little bit of piano as well. So she went in by herself. I got her a ticket to watch André Rieu, who has a perm, a mullet that would have made Michael Flatley proud back in the days of Riverdance in 1980. God knows what. Stradivarius he plays. Stradivarius? Stradivarius. André Rieu. She came back in the door last night about 10:45. Delighted. Delighted. Loves her classical music. So that was great. Yeah. Are we screwed? Whatever you want to discuss with me. Thursday in Waterford in Ireland, at least it was when I was DJing, was ladies' night. Ladies got in for free in Waterford. Now, that might have been common in other parts of the world. So I'd like to hear from some ladies today. Last phone in, you were strangely absent. We don't ordinarily have a problem getting the ladies to phone in. Like a bit of gender balance, so I do. It's 4 minutes, or not quite 4 minutes, past the hour, Thursday's programme. And would you believe it, I turned the aircon on in the studio for a half an hour this afternoon because it's kind of warm. When we were out with the doggies just after lunchtime, it felt pleasant, but not especially warm. But the studio, you see, is south-facing with big old windows, and it just gets quite warm whenever it's sunny. Now, the Queen, not my Queen, maybe your queen, maybe not your queen. Whose queen? I don't know. The Queen is 96 today. Apparently, the old battle axe has two birthdays, an official one, which is at some other time of the year, and the real one, which is today. All sorts of pageantry and pomp going on around Windsor, even though she isn't there, apparently, and all sorts of stuff. Now, the Richie Allen Show reaches far and wide, as you well know, and we have some strange listeners, people you wouldn't imagine, you know, who would be listening to programmes like this. But a Buckingham Palace insider got in touch with the programme yesterday and said, Richie, would you like a copy of the Queen's birthday itinerary, would you, to share with your listeners? And I said, well, we don't do that sort of mainstream media, legacy media bollocks, but if you want to share a copy of the Queen's birthday itinerary for me, well, sure, look, I'll read it out to the listeners anyway. They might get something out of it. Now, this is official. It's even printed on official paper, right? This is genuine now. The itinerary, at least up until lunchtime today. 3 o'clock, that's 3 a.m. Get up, go for a piss, and go back to bed. 4:15 a.m. Get up, go for a piss, and go back to bed. 5:20 a.m. Go for a piss, and go back to bed. 6 o'clock, rise for good breakfast. 6:30 a.m. Walk with the horses. I think there was a photograph released to the media of that. 7:30 a.m. breakfast with a glass of Buck's Fizz. 8 a.m. check that Andrew isn't wanking off to child porn online. Very good. Very good. 8:15 a.m. walk the corgis and remember to bring Sarah Ferguson along to pick up the shit. That's 8:15. 9 a.m. phone Harry to call him a useless ginger donut and inquire as to whether he's still with that half-caste or not. Hang up before he can answer. At 9:30, a stiff G&T. This is in the morning now. 10 a.m., intravenous dose of adrenochrome. What's that? Does anybody know what that is? I haven't a clue. Adrenochrome, help me out here. That's 9:30. No, that was 10 o'clock. Let's get it right. Intravenous dose of adrenochrome. 10:45, check again that Andrew isn't wanking off to child pornography online. 11 o'clock, practice waving in case you're asked to do an emergency public engagement. 11:30 a.m., car trip to the Althorpe estate to urinate on Diana's grave. And that's about all that they shared with me. That's the itinerary for the Queen's birthday today. Quite a few checks on Andrew's online behaviours in there. Right, it's 7.5 minutes past the hour. That's the level. Wimbledon banning players then just because they are Russian nationals or Belarusian nationals. There's been some player reaction to this. We can check in with the BBC News 24.
Russian and Belarusian players who speak out against Russia's invasion of Ukraine should be allowed to compete at Wimbledon, says Ukrainian tennis player Elina Svitolina. Her comments come after the All England Tennis Club banned both Russian and Belarusian players from competing in the tournament this summer. Tennis governing bodies, the ATP and WTA, have described the decision as unfair, and Svitolina believes players should have a chance to compete if they condemn the war.
For me, I think if the players would speak about the invasion and they would be against the war that is happening against their government, then for me, they should be allowed to play. We are not against the tennis player, we're against the government. So for me, the right decision, if you're not supporting it, then you would be allowed to play.
Make a public declaration that you do not support your government's aggression in Ukraine, says Svitolina, and it is okay that you play. Keep that in mind. Novak Djokovic. Play.
Meanwhile, men's world number one Novak Djokovic said Wimbledon's decision to ban Russian and Belarusian players is crazy.
I will always condemn war. I will never support war, being myself a child of war. I know how much emotional trauma it leaves. In Serbia, we all know what happened in 1999. In the Balkans, we have had many wars in recent history, and ordinary people suffer the most. However, I cannot support the decision of Wimbledon. I think it's crazy. Players, tennis players, sports people have got nothing to do with that. When politics interferes with sport, the result is not good.
Novak Djokovic there. The man with 20 grand slams to his name, Martina Navratilova, joined him in condemning the decision to ban the Belarusian and Russian players. And I've been saying this in the past, sometimes by way of joking, but with a trace of seriousness, that affirmations might very well be in the future for people, you know, people who might want to remain employed, people who might want to remain, I don't know, participating in society. Affirmations. You might be asked to give an opinion on something, and a kind of a reply from you saying that you prefer to keep your opinions to yourself won't be good enough. I can see it in the future. You know, you might be asked in your place of work, for example, do you accept that biological sex is not binary and that men can transition into women and that trans women are real women? Do you accept that? Well, do you? Do you? You might be asked. You won't be able to say, well, that's my business, what I think. You'll inevitably lie to keep your job. Yes, I do believe that trans women are real women. Now, I have a conference call with the New York office in a moment, if you'll excuse me. They'll say, well, we don't believe you. Prove it. What? Prove it? What? Yes, we want you to perform oral sex on Mary. What? The tranny? I mean, the woman who works in the canteen? Yes, go and blow Mary. Feck it, you might say. Why not? A change is as good as a rest. Come on, Mary, we'll do it in the bathroom. You can wash yourself in the sink at the very least. What kind of fuckery are you? Told you that's the level. But the affirmations thing, I'm convinced it's in the future for youngsters, for children going to school, for people in the workplace. I really do believe that. It's coming up for 12 minutes past the hour. I'll be taking your calls in around about 20 minutes. I've quite a few more headlines to run through, but before we do that, let's have a tune so I can gather my thoughts. It's the Richie Allen Show, live from Salford with me, Richie Allen. This is Odyssey, Thursday's show. Native New Yorker from Odyssey on The Richie Allen Show.
You're listening to Your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk.
And I'll be taking your phone calls fairly soon. If you want the details, here they are, but you will find them on richieallen.co.uk.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
The UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is in India. Parliament held a debate. Well, Parliament MPs debated today whether or not they would launch an investigation into whether Boris Johnson lied about poor teas. He lied. He lies. They lied. MPs, they lie. All of them. It's what they do. Self-serving, narcissistic, wankers, one and all. It's what they do. It's pure theatre. And on some level, and I said this about Donald Trump, didn't I, some years ago, this is reinvigorating people. It's re-engaging them with politics. They're more into it now than ever, at a time when maybe more and more people should be realising that it is one massive charade. But sadly, they're getting more and more engaged with it, you know. It amazes me. I know, you're naive, Richie. Of course I am. None of us are perfect. But presenters like James O'Brien, LBC and others calling for Boris Johnson's head for lying about a party and calling it depravity and saying, wait for it, that the system wasn't built to withstand this sort of depravity.
I don't know what the answer is. Our system wasn't built to deal with this level of depravity.
Where's he been for the last 25 years, I wonder?
Just as the American Constitution was not built to accommodate someone as dishonest and as depraved as Donald Trump.
You're shitting me, right? You've never heard of George W. Bush. You've never heard of Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush before him. Ronald Reagan? No, no. Trump was the only arsehole, was he, ever to inhabit the Oval Office? What's wrong with this guy?
Trump. You lie and lie and lie again. You break the law and then claim the law doesn't matter. And then you're found to have broken it again. And you say, well, look, I told you last time it doesn't matter. It's incredible. And that's probably why most of the Brexit stroke Boris Johnson supporting newspapers today are trying to get you angry with Prince Harry again. Prince Harry. Yesterday it was Keir Starmer. You've got a lying prime minister busted for breaking the law. Yesterday you were supposed to get angry with Keir Starmer for talking about it. And today you're supposed to get angry with Prince Harry for reasons that I'm afraid I have neither the energy or the inclination to bother finding out. Probably still being married to a woman of colour. Is that what it's about? Yeah. Yeah, I thought so.
What a virtue signalling little douchebag James O'Brien is. I doubt very much the hacks at the Daily Mail or the Sun or the Telegraph give a rat's arse that Meghan Markle is mixed race. They probably just don't like her. Possibly. Who abandons their father? A bloke who never did wrong by her. That might have riled a few of them. That being said, he's on his own gravy train now these days, isn't he, Thomas Markle? Didn't MI6 give him a heart attack to make sure he couldn't visit for the wedding a couple of years ago, maybe? But you know, this depravity, this outrage from O'Brien when they kept it zipped, when they kept it buttoned, when Johnson was riding roughshod over civil liberties, killing tens of thousands of people in care homes, waging psychological warfare on children, ruining livelihoods, putting people under virtual house arrest. No, no, the pretenders who are screaming bloody murder at Johnson, they know that lying about a party is the least of his crimes. And I'm wrong, of course. They didn't keep it zipped. They didn't keep it buttoned when he inflicted lockdowns and house arrest and non-visitation of dying relatives in care homes and economic devastation. They didn't keep it zipped, dickheads like James O'Brien. They castigated Johnson and his government for not doing it sooner and harder. Wankers, every single one of them. It's the least of his crimes, Johnson. The least of his crimes. And they're silent today, dear listener. If you heard yesterday's monologue, you will have heard me refer to emerging news that children are coming down with hepatitis. And scientists and doctors are saying we don't know why they are coming down with hepatitis, because the normal viruses that cause hepatitis are not present. Doctors are saying they are stumped. We can't find the usual viruses in the kiddies, the ones that lead to hepatitis. We haven't a clue. But it's not the vaccines. It's not the vaccines. How do you know that? It's not the vaccines. Might very well be the vaccines. Not that I know, if it is, because I don't. I can't say that. 21 minutes past five. The European Union yesterday announced €1.5 billion of weapons for Ukraine. A sleepy, creepy Joe Biden, the US president, who is not feeling up little girls in photo shoots anymore because he's so far gone. He's so far gone. He's being steered away from crowds now by the Easter Bunny. Absolutely not compass mentis at all, but he was able to look into an autocue today and say the United States would be sending $800 million worth of weapons to Ukraine as well. Why are we not in the midst of World War III? First of all, thanks be to Jesus, we're not. I don't know. The Western media reported this afternoon that Vladimir Putin has ordered soldiers not to storm the Azovstal steel plant, where apparently Ukrainian fighters, the very last of them, are hiding in Mariupol. Don't storm the steel plant and kill the last of these soldiers in Mariupol, Putin allegedly said. Apparently he wants them to be sealed in, basically imprisoned. The Russians are saying, the Russian government is saying, it now controls the strategic port city of Mariupol. What is going on? I haven't a clue. I haven't a clue, and I've heard it all. The president of the World Bank has warned that the world's facing human catastrophe because of the food shortages. If you listened to Garrido Colmón, the Irish journalist on the programme last night, if you caught that, he spoke very well about that and the implications of that and what that starvation will mean for migration from sub-Saharan Africa, from other parts of the world. It's going to be chaos. David Malpass, the head of the World Bank, the president of the World Bank, which, of course, I'm not going to get into what the World Bank is. I'm sure you know this is entry-level stuff. It's dreadful. But he said the rising food prices we are witnessing now will get worse and would plunge hundreds of millions of people into poverty and starvation. That's bad enough. But he also said, did Malpass, that a lot of third world countries won't be able to pay their debts. Debts that were accrued fighting the so-called pandemic, paving the way for looting those countries for whatever is left in them that hasn't been pilfered in the past. But of course, you know, this poverty, this starvation, this mass movement of people, you know, this is all part of a long-standing agenda. You know this. I don't need to tell you this. You might want to talk about it shortly. You might not. You might want to talk about, I don't know, the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard defamation court case. You might want to talk about that and the shocking revelations coming out of that. I don't know what you might want to do. What you can do, if you don't want to talk to me on air, is you can leave me a message on richieallen.co.uk. That's my website. In fact, I'm going to read one or two messages now. That's what I'm going to do, because I said I would. Just got to open the website now. I didn't open it previously. Here we are. Alan says, these turds on the media are trying to highlight the least criminal action by MPs, including the fat one. All of them are traitors. Anyone who votes for the Coronavirus Act, anyone who voted for it and dismissed the alternative opinion, are collaborators. Any World Economic Forum puppets, well, they need lancing like boils, says Alan. David Keane says, he makes me sick, O'Brien. Paul says, O'Brien, seriously, his shtick, the use of all the heavily emotive language, it seems obvious to me that he's just playing his part and delivering exactly what his fake left audience wants, their daily dose of outrage. Isabel says, hey, Richie, don't forget Tony Blair, the worst of them. Yes, of course, we could go back to Blair. We could talk about David Cameron and Libya. We could talk about how in 2015, the Foreign Affairs Select Committee found that the UK Prime Minister lied about the reasons for a no-fly zone over Libya. Lied about it. And countless people died in Libya as well. And the Libyan president was murdered. Yes, absolutely. Bren says the disgusting MPs are trying to turn our world into the reality Truman Show. I will never consent to it, says Bren. Fabrizio says, blow, J-O-B, will never ask, blow, James O'Brien, blow job, will never ask why the fuckers didn't fear the world's deadliest damn panic, nor who else was involved. How about Ferguson? Brenda says it's all about swearing your allegiance to the state slash country and its political agenda in all its manifestations, backed up by the online harms bill, dissenters to be labelled terrorists against the state and treated accordingly. That's Brenda. Thank you, Brenda. Good evening, Charlotte and Burnley. Hi to John, who says the What Kind of Fuckery jingle is great, particularly in this world full of fuckery, says John. Patricia, how are you doing, Patricia, my pal? How many American tennis players were banned when the United States invaded Iraq under false excuses? Exactly. How many UK sportsmen and women have been banned in recent years as the country sells arms, weapons of mass destruction to the heinous Saudi regime to rain hellfire and damnation down on Yemeni men, women and children? How many people have suggested, well, maybe Andy Murray shouldn't be allowed to play in Wimbledon? Maybe. because it's got nothing to do with Andy Murray, no more than it has anything to do with Daniil Medvedev, the Russian number one and the world number two. Of course, he shouldn't be banned. Well said, Patricia. RitchieAllen.co.uk. Comment live at the top of the page. Mr. Sin says, I guess politics in sport is a thing of the past. Dave says, Richie, isn't adrenochrome what the globalists have allegedly extracted from the glands of frightened, kidnapped children? That's the theory, Dave. That is the theory. It's often mentioned on this programme in phone-ins over the years, the longevity of the royal family. The longevity. Diana died, was killed, was murdered. I don't know. I'm guessing she was murdered. Noel Botham, rest in peace, great journalist, wrote for The Telegraph for years. He was a war correspondent. And Noel is dead now, wrote for me the definitive book on what happened. She was murdered. But if they don't die unnaturally through, you know, car crashes or falling off of horses or tripping over a corgi and breaking your neck, they generally tend to go on forever and ever and ever. Amen, don't they? Don't they? Hi to Pandora and to Gail. Thanks for your messages. I think it's nearly time for me to take your phone calls. Shall I play the jingle first again? If you can't take it down, it's on richieallen.co.uk too.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
I just want to very quickly check, because I should have done it just before I started the programme. I'm going to check the BBC website to see is there any movement on that silly debate about Johnson. It might be time for them to remove Boris Johnson. Now, I believe, and this is my opinion, it could be argued, this is only my opinion, that this stuff is micromanaged in terms of whatever or whoever is behind the agenda. They choose every single prime minister. Now, you might say that's entry-level stuff, Richie. Yes, yes, yes. But there are those who argue that they don't need to micromanage it that much. They just need to fund all sides of politics and to own all politicians. Yes, they might be right. But I tend to think that whenever there is a change in office, it's because they've pushed a button. And I wonder, as we move into the next stage, and I've been speaking to you for years, you've been speaking back to me, we share an opinion, I think, that this is going to move now towards climate. Not entirely, they're not going to forget viruses and vaccines, of course they're not, but this is going to move now towards climate scaremongering big time. And I wonder, and of course, digital currencies, big time. And I wonder if they've decided that now is the time for a change. Johnson to have to leave, maybe not next week, but maybe in a few weeks, maybe, after the local elections in early May. Well, it's actually the 21st of April today. So let's say 2 or 3 weeks' time, maybe Johnson has to step aside, maybe. And then for a year, maybe, somebody like, I don't know, Michael Gove, maybe even Liz Truss, maybe. And then at the end of that year, a general election, which the Labour Party wins in a landslide, and Keir Starmer is the front man chosen to take the agenda down the path of the digital currencies and the climate change scaremongering and all the gender bollocks and all of that, maybe. Just maybe that's something you'd like to tell me about. Maybe you'd like to correct me. Maybe you think I'm talking through my sphincter. I often talk through my sphincter because I don't know as much as I think I know. Your call's next. I hear the sound. That is Bruce of the Boss, Springsteen and Ghosts on the Richie Allen Show. I'm taking your calls now via Skype and via telephone. The details have just been put on the Richie Allen Show Facebook page. Rog tells me it's facebook.com/BBG Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E, facebook.com/BBG Richie. They're also available to see on richieallen.co.uk, but here you go again anyway.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's +44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Taking a call still just before 7 o'clock, so I'm looking forward to them. Just before I do that, Craig says ration cards as a way to introduce digital IDs might be a possibility. And the food shortages would be an excellent way to segue into the impact of climate change. Now, I believe that Geraint O'Colmhoun said something pretty similar last night on the radio show, if memory serves. Bren says, Rishi or Sajid next before you say it. Not sure about Rishi Sunak. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But there is method to their madness, you know, when it comes to picking these people. Hi to Fabrizio again. Thanks for your link there. Matt Hancock. Yeah, this I could have mentioned this in the monologue, but I didn't. Matt Hancock gave an interview on GB News last night to a guy called Dan Wooten, another arsehole Wooten. Dreadful. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Basically, Hancock was on there to talk about the fact that he will be publishing a diary-type book, a book or a diary of his time as health secretary and how he saw the unfolding events, the so-called pandemic going back to March of 2020 that was trending, to use that terrible term, on Twitter. Today, a lot of interest in that. Number of you are telling me about adrenochrome. It's a funny one, that, because if you look that up online, and I don't need to do that because we've heard from people talking about these things on many an occasion in the past. But if you look it up online, it immediately talks to you about QAnon and all of that crap. It relates adrenochrome to QAnon. But I have been doing this type of program now for many years, and long before Donald Trump ever made it to the White House, long before QAnon was ever a figment of anyone's imagination, I was hearing from people making allegations that world leaders and royalty have been taking blood transfusions from healthy young people in a bid to, well, to beat ageing and stuff like that. So it isn't a new thing. And that's something I'm open-minded to. Of course, I wouldn't be doing this program if I wasn't. So that's a very... But yeah, they link it now to adrenochrome. Speaking of Trump, he's given an interview to Piers Morgan, the former Good Morning Britain presenter. He's doing something now with Talk TV. Talk TV is part of the Talk Radio group. You know, Talk Radio, Julia Hartley Brewer and others and whatnot. They're launching in a couple of days. They've spent a fortune, apparently, on decking out a new studio for Piers Morgan. And as part of the big launch, he interviewed Donald Trump, the former president, and typically of Piers Morgan, who is a pathological liar, Piers Morgan, the former editor of the Daily Mirror, a world-class liar. They put out a bit of a promo for the Trump interview, and they made it look like Trump ended the interview by storming off the set, when in fact that didn't happen. Start, I suppose, as you mean to go on if you are say it for me, Piers Morgan. Now, for only the second time ever, I'm having some difficulty with my phone setup here. It's a very, very sophisticated, highly calibrated phone and Skype setup. It really is. And it's on the blink at the moment, I think. I'm going to give you the phone details again, then I'm going to take a tune and I'm going to try and fix it. You'll have to bear with me.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Yeah, a little bit of a problem with my phone setup. I'm sorry about that. I did check it before coming on air, as I always do. You see, I don't have an engineer, I don't have a producer, I don't have a runner, I don't have an assistant. So before I do the phone and I check to make sure it's working, I phone myself, effectively, and it was all honky-dory. It was all peachy. But at the moment, it's not peachy. So I'm going to get on it and sort it out. And hopefully, shortly, you and I will be talking about some of these issues. It says 17 and a half minutes to 6 o'clock, Thursday's programme, the 21st of April, 2022. The BBG, live from BBG Towers. This is the Hollies of Manchester. Long, cool woman in a black dress. That's the one, the Hollies. Rebooted the old phone system, and I think we're back online. It's live radio. Just before we say hi to our first caller, let me give you the details again. Going to be taking your calls till around about 10 minutes to the top of the air. That's 7 o'clock, by the way.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Great stuff. Let's welcome our first caller to the programme today. How are you doing, caller? Who am I speaking with?
Well, Richie, I just come to save your arse, mate. I just rang up because I knew you were having technical problems. I thought, oh, shit, I better call Richie and just get him out of that hole.
Which wasn't very clever because the phone system was down momentarily. I rebooted it, and when I switched it back on, you called through. So it doesn't make any sense what you just said, but I'm delighted you're here anyway. How are you?
Well, mate, I was just trying to get you out of a hole. You know, you do a live show. It's Rainpoint Marcus, by the way. How are you doing, bro?
I'm well, Marcus. I'm in good form. It's sweltering here in Costa del Salford.
I couldn't get off the line, but I just wanted to make sure you're back online. That was the main thing.
We never panic here, Marcus. 25 years of live radio experience. If I couldn't take a phone call, I would have just gabbed away by myself for the next 45 to 50 minutes.
What happened? Because I just thought, well, I better call in and just make sure his line's working and stuff like that.
Oh, no, I way ahead of you. Do you not think that's the first thing I tried to do, Marcus, was to phone it myself? Good to hear from you. Hey, listen, before you do get off, do you have any idea as to what's going on in Ukraine and why?
You know what? I'll be honest with you, Richie. I have not listened to one bloody word of Ukraine at all. And I'm completely not interested in who gets... do you know what? I've just switched off on a lot of it. The only thing I'm really looking at is when am I going to go on holiday again?
At the moment, I think it's looking pretty good for people who do want to go on holiday. Most European countries have dropped, when I say most of them.
But Spain, I mean, you know, you know me, Richard, we've talked before, you know, I'm a DJ.
You're a DJ, yeah.
I can't go and do it.
You don't have to have, but what is it with Spain? Is Spain requiring the PCR test still?
They want you to be jabbed up to 6 months beforehand. Otherwise, you can't go in.
Marcus, double check that. Listen, I'm often wrong, and I might be wrong now, but I thought that changed in the last couple of weeks.
It could have done. I looked at the government website today, and it's still so many. You can do this, you can do that, but you're not allowed to do this. And if you do that, it's like, come on, where are we going with this? Can I get a passport and can I come to your country?
Can I come and spend some money in your country? Yeah, a country that depends almost exclusively on tourism to generate money. Look, double check it because I think...
Richie, you lived in Spain. You know how important that is.
Well, tourism is it. Yeah, it's the be-all. But listen, I think just around Easter, just before Easter, the Spanish relaxed that. So double check that and get yourself off to Ibiza. Good to hear from you, Marcus.
Double check your line.
Oh, I'm live. Oh, yeah. I'm always live. I might not be alive, but I'm live.
I'm going to let you get on. I'm looking forward to the phone as well.
Cheers, Marcus.
Love you.
And cheers, buddy. Thank you very much. What's happened is the system has updated itself the way some computer systems do. And it's a bit messy because somebody else has tried to get through there and I've just tried to take the call in and it won't let me do it. It's being temperamental. I'm sorry about this. There was a queue of calls as well. I know this just before I played the Springsteen song. And now the blasted thing has gone down again. Ah, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I might just reboot it again or I might just piss off. I won't do that. I won't piss off. I'll hang around. I'll hang around like a bad smell. Don't you do that all the time anyway, don't you? I do. I absolutely do. I'll play some music from Train. I'll do that in a moment. I'm just going to try that again because calls are trying to come through, but I can't take them on. This happened before and it was a sophisticated fix, sadly. My great friend Paul Ripley from Fab Radio International was the man responsible for building the studio. He's a bit of a genius. And I had to get him out and it was pretty messy and nasty. But yeah, the thing is just not, it's just not happening now. Oh, good God. All right, I'm going to reboot it again. Failing that, I'm going to have to go a different way. You'll forgive me. I know you will. Jesus, for a bloke who prides himself on mirroring and bettering the production values of the mainstream media. Believe me, when something like this happens, it properly pisses me off because there isn't anything I can do about it in this instance. But I might try and get Paul to do it remotely if he can. In the meantime, here's a tune for you. Train and Mermaid. We liked that song back around about the time it came out. We were living in Spain at the time. It's a 7.5 minutes to the top of the hour. I think I might have fixed the old phone system. Very sophisticated stuff here. I think I might have fixed it. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hello there, Richie. How are you doing? It's Sean McFall here, calling from Spain.
Hello, Sean. It's been a long time. Welcome back. Now, I'm guessing that you might have some information for Marcus.
Absolutely, Richie. Just to let him know, because, as you know, I'm unjabbed. And to get into Spain, which I have to do regularly, you need to either have the PCR test still or the antigen.
Brilliant. So they recently dropped the requirement that you are jabbed.
Yes, before they'd stipulated that only the jabbed could get in, but they dropped that and now the jabbed get in without a test, but the unjabbed have got to have the test.
Got to have a test. So Marcus can go to Ibiza, but he has to subject himself to one of these tests.
Yeah, just the antigen test. And, well, it's worth the listeners noting that for nearly 2 years I haven't had it in the nose. I tell them I've got a deviated septum.
Brilliant.
And I get it in the mouth, and then I swirl my mouth out straight after I do it.
Fantastic.
So I carry a bottle of water and iodine around with me, swirl my mouth out, and then crack on.
So I love that, Sean. I love that. So nobody says, hey, tilt your head back there, Irishman, so I can have a look up your nose to see the deviated septum.
No, I just tell them point blank. And then I, at the same time when I've done it, I try to educate them. And I've not found one. Not one of the testers yet that knows anything about the test or what's on the end or allegedly on the end of the test. And they're very ignorant to everything about the whole testing procedure.
So, yeah.
But interestingly as well, Richie, the mandate for masks here in Spain dropped a couple of days ago. And I was up walking around a big shopping centre here called La Zenia, and in there today, I would say 30 to 40% were all still masked up after being told by the government you don't need it outdoors or indoors now, apart from like hospitals and public transport.
Sean, what do you
the damn things.
What do you put that down to? Is it because they were genuinely spooked in 2020?
No, I'll put it down to the mass formation psychosis, to be honest, because it's not just the Spanish. The bloody expats are just as bad, if not worse, some of them. And what makes me laugh is they'll walk around the streets with it on, and then they'll sit down in a crowded bar and they'll take it off. And then as soon as they go to stand back up, bungles a mask.
I know, that's
and
mad.
Then they go walking around in fresh air with a bloody mask on. I've kind of given up on it now, Richie, because I'm very selective about my circle of friends, which wasn't big in the beginning, but it's even smaller now because I can't be bothered discussing with them. I can't be bothered. I just can't be bothered with them, full stop. And I'm sure there's a lot of the listeners feel the same way.
I think there's liberation in that, just accepting you can't do very much about it. I've adopted your attitude, Sean. I see people here on bicycles. You know, where we live in Salford, it's pretty busy. So there are lots of people moving about. And it really drove me a bit batshit crazy early on. Now it's just water off a duck's back, you know. I'm not going to change their minds if I was to speak to them. I mean, who the hell am I? So, yeah, I just leave it go. There's nothing I can do about it.
No, I've kind of given up on them now, Richie. But one thing I wanted to say, because I know you'll have other callers waiting to get on. Just, do you remember the last time that we spoke, or the time before that, we were talking about when I had mentioned to you I met that guy from the London School of Economics 20
yes,
years ago?
Yes.
And he said, your head will be spinning, you'll be attacked from every possible direction, and you'll be begging for war. And he said, and that's on the cards as well. And everything's fallen into place now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is now, yeah. And we're at this. Somebody said something to me on the last phone in which I thought was really, really well put. I can't remember. I think it was one of the lady callers, maybe, said that it feels like we're in a bit of a holding pattern at the moment. There's a bit of uneasiness because we're, you know, we're getting into the late spring. It seems that the COVID stuff is easing off. The regulations have gone away, or the rules, the crazy rules, the arbitrary rules. And yet we know instinctively that there are bad things to come. So it's a bit uneasy, kind of an uneasy feeling. Do you get that?
I personally think it's part of the psyop and the way that they manipulate minds, Richie. I firmly believe that they take the foot off the gas a little bit and they've got something lined up which is going to crush us even further, and that's going to come very, very soon. And I do think it's all part of messing with the mind, because you've got to remember, in the early days, the Soviet Union, the communists done the exact same thing. They made the rules so insane, so arbitrary, that people gave up thinking.
Yeah.
Look at the parallels there between what we're seeing today and what the Soviets have done. People have given up, you know, thinking for themselves, and they just go into automatron mode and just follow whatever is said to them. They question nothing. They, even when you try to educate them and show them facts, I've done it many, many times where I've put the facts in front of them and I've said, look, there is the peer-reviewed information on what I'm telling you. It's not me that's telling you this. There it is there.
Yeah.
And they won't even look at it. They don't want to look at it. So it's like cognitive dissonance on steroids. And this is part of the reason why I just said, you know what, to hell with them. You know, just let them get on with it. They'll get the karma at the end of the day.
And, you know, there's a danger, just before you do go, Sean, there is a danger that, I mean, I fell into this trap a couple of weeks ago, because I said to my missus, I said, about somebody that we bumped into, not somebody we knew, but somebody who was an avid COVID believer, you know, somebody wearing the masks,
yeah,
with the visor as well, and all of that. And I said to the missus, the Great Reset people and the politicians and those people, those are not our enemies. The compliers, yeah, are our enemy. And I don't think I should think like that, because these are people who've never really done any harm to anybody. And maybe the system wants us to look at those who wear the masks and roll up their sleeves as enemy number one. And I kind of fell into that trap. I took a real fit of anger without saying anything, of course. I didn't open my mouth because, you know, it's none of my business. But I thought, you're the enemy, you're the reason. And that could lead to a dangerous thing. What do you think?
Absolutely, totally. And it takes us back again to the communist system when the Stasi were formed. And what they'd actually done was, this is where your commissars and that went on every vessel that left the Soviet Union to make sure that everybody towed the line and were kept in check. And the people have become, just like under the Stasi, they've become the policemen of their own system. So you know, every Joe average on the street is now policing his fellow brother and sister. And this is the way it's gone, exactly as they done in communism, exactly the same. So they don't even need to do it because we'll do it ourselves for them. And this is the sad part about it all, Richie.
Great to have you back on the programme, Sean. Thanks for the update.
Been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Richie, and keep up the good work. It's the only thing that's keeping me sane, my friend. Thanks again.
You're very kind for saying that, Sean. Thanks a million. Sean there on the line from Spain. So just if you happen to be listening, and I know you will be, Marcus, do check it out. Just before Easter, they did remove the rule that said you needed to be jabbed to get in. So they did do that. It's exactly a minute past six. The old system, the phone and Skype system, seems to be holding up. Thanks be to Jesus. We're going to the Skype now. Caller, welcome to the programme. Just before I welcome you in, do turn me off in the background. I might be on. You might be listening to me and Skyping me on the same system. So turn me down so I don't get any echo. It's Thursday's Richie Allen Show, taking your calls. If you want the details, go to my website, richieallen.co.uk. They're on the Facebook page as well. And just before we say hi to my caller, here they are if you're too lazy to do that.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
And I did mention Garrod O'Colmón and his conversation with me last night. Every episode of the programme is archived at richieallen.podomatic.com. It's where you'll find it. It's on iTunes as well. And the rest. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hello.
I'm getting you loud and clear. Welcome. Who am I talking to?
George.
Is it Judd?
George.
George, welcome, George. Nice to have you on. Where are you calling me from?
I'm calling you from Northwest Scotland, up in the Highlands.
Sounds gorgeous, George. Northwest Highlands.
It is. It's brilliant up here. Well, what I want to phone about is Bojo is off to India. And what's happening over there, he's wanting a deal from the Indians, and they call it a trade deal. It's not. It's an immigration deal.
Explain that, George.
Well, all these so-called trade deals, he goes over there and he's going to waiver the immigration for Indians to come here. Right? They're going to waiver the immigration for them. I don't mind Indian people, but if you're going to do that for one group of people, you have to do it for them all.
I saw him give an interview to Beth Rigby from Sky News earlier on, George, and he said that he said one of the things he was doing was he was selling British-grown apples into the Indian market, right? And absolute garbage, right? So he talked about some other things. And you reckon, now I haven't seen this, but I take you at your word, you reckon that part of that deal is it's going to be easier for Indian people to come here?
Yeah, it's a stealth deal, right? So the NHS needs doctors.
Ah, right.
And it needs nurses. So where are they going to get them from? They'll get them from the subcontinent. I don't know how many barrels of apples it will cost.
But, you know, you make a good point right there. They're short about 10,000 doctors. Apparently, they're short tens of thousands of nurses. Now, traditionally, the standard of education, I sound like I'm an expert, but of course I'm not. I'm not an expert in anything. But I understand that when doctors come from India, they're usually pretty well trained, George. They're usually pretty good. So it's a good thing, basically.
It is. It is a good thing. But to me, it smacks of double standards because they're not going to let the poor caste Indian over here. It's going to be the middle class Indian with the education.
Yeah.
And I know that we're short of health workers because of mismanagement from the Second World War up to today, since the NHS has been in 1948 when Bevan started it. But honestly, it's a big con.
Can I ask you this, George? It's because you sound like you might be a bit of an old school trade unionist like myself, would you be? An old lefty. Yeah. Right. So here's my question, right? We're dinosaurs now. There's very few of us left. So I have a question for you, George, since this is a genuine question. So you said he's going to allow educated Indian young men and women into the country, but he's not going to let those who maybe don't have education, you know, maybe kind of manual workers. Now, as a lifelong trade unionist, I agree with that, because if there's a shortage of industrial jobs in the country anyway, it's difficult enough for semi-skilled British people to get a job. If you open the doors to people from India, well, it's going to be very difficult anyway. Now, of course, when you say that, you get accused of racism. I don't believe I have a racist bone in my body. But you understand where I'm coming from. I don't want to see unskilled workers come into Ireland or to Britain in big numbers. Go ahead, George.
I do understand you, Richie.
But you disagree with me, I think.
No. It's just a case maybe he's going to get the Punky Waller Indian over to cut the apples off the trees. So they might allow some of them over. But
I tell you what, George. I tell you what, if they paid a decent wage and if there were decent benefits, I wouldn't mind picking strawberries and apples and God knows what else. The problem is they don't pay very good wages for these jobs.
No.
It wouldn't cover my mortgage, George.
No, that's right. These type of jobs used to be done with gypsies, travellers.
That's right.
And they used to go seasonal. They would finish the strawberries and then the apples would be ready and then the potatoes would be ready. I remember in the village I was brought up in the Central Belt, the farmers coming into the village in October, and we all jumped on the back, women and children, on the back and took to a big field to pick tatties.
Fantastic. And how much would you... Were you paid by the weight when you did that? So you filled a bucket, it got weighed. Do you know, we have a lot in common. When I was a young boy, I used to go to Wexford from Waterford, and in the summer a bus would pick us up, all the children, and we would spend as much time as we wanted. We weren't forced to do it, but picking strawberries for pocket money. And it was great fun it was.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. And you know what the farmer fed you? You know what it was?
No, I have no idea. Go on.
A big two ciders with jam in the middle. It was beautiful.
Even for the children?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Hey, tell me this. How in the name of God can you get such a good signal up in the Highlands? Because your signal is perfect. You sound great.
It's EE. You've heard the EE.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon makes the ads, doesn't he, for them? Kevin Bacon, the actor. That's the guy, yeah.
Well, it's EE. When I moved up here 7 years ago, I couldn't get a signal. I was on O2. So locals tell me, you won't get a signal up here for that. You have to go and get a SIM card for EE.
For EE.
And that's what I've done.
That's a fantastic advertisement for EE. Of course, I won't get a penny for that. Thanks very much, George. tell me this. So what sort of a community? Are you in a fairly isolated area then? Have you got many neighbours up there?
Yeah. This is a very isolated village up here. It's, for me, I think it's great.
You love it.
It's a place called Loch Inver.
Say that again now, George. You're Loch Unger, did you say?
It's a place called Loch Inver.
Ah, very good. Did you say Inver?
Aye.
Loch Inver. And you said
Google it.
I definitely will Google it after the program. Do you grow anything for yourself up there?
Yeah, I do. I grow. I put up a polytunnel and I can grow peppers and tomatoes and stuff like that.
The old polytunnel. And
I grew some monkey puzzle trees from seed. I went on the internet, got some monkey puzzle seeds.
Hang on a second. Are you taking the piss out of me by saying monkey puzzle seeds? What are they?
Monkey puzzle trees, honestly.
Go on.
If I could send you one, I would.
And what?
As a present.
Is that right, yeah? I'm ignorant when it comes to horticulture or farming. I'm really ignorant, George. I'm just going to take another call, mate. But look, fantastic call. Thanks for buzzing in.
Well, thank you, Richie. It's a pleasure because you do a lot of good work in this world.
Oh, you're very kind, George. Thanks so much for that. It looks lovely. It looks very bright where you are. It looks like it's glorious up there today.
It is. I'll probably keep in touch waiting for it.
Do keep in touch, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You're in the system now, George. Keep in touch, mate. And good luck with the growing of the monkey puzzle seeds. Did you say? I can't believe that.
The monkey puzzle seeds.
You're taking the royal piss out of me there. Listen, thanks very much.
No.
Cheers, George. No.
I wouldn't do that, right? Thank you. Bye.
Cheers, buddy. Bye-bye. I thought George was taking the piss out of the Irishman there, you know. People do that sometimes. I don't know why. Up in the Highlands, 12 minutes past six. We're back to the phones. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, my name's Keith. I'm actually calling you from Cyprus.
Keith in Cyprus. Welcome to the programme. Keith, if I'm on in the background, turn me off. I might be on the same device you're using. But you're welcome to the programme, mate. Lovely to meet you. I guess it's a glorious day there in Cyprus today, is it?
Well, yes, it's always sunny in Cyprus.
Of course, it's always sunny.
That's the advertising slogan, isn't it?
Keith, you know when somebody says Cyprus to me, I immediately think of bail-ins. Do you remember the bail-ins when the Cypriot government decided you were here? And I think of that because I think it might be in our future here in the UK. But enough of my nonsense. It's your call, pal. What would you like to say? And thanks for calling in.
Well, limited time, so I'll be as fast as I can. I'm really amazed and nervous to be speaking to 20 million people worldwide.
Don't be nervous. I wish it was 20 million worldwide, buddy.
I will touch very quickly on the bail-ins. Basically, what they did, they used a very, very clever psychological trick at the time. What they initially did was they said that they would take money from everybody's bank account. Now, obviously, that wasn't their end goal. But what that did was it basically put everyone up in arms because they said we're going to cream everybody's bank accounts to a certain amount. And obviously, so that there was a feeling of, oh, no, well, all of us, so there was a communal, you can't do that. Now, obviously, they were never going to do that. Their next step was then say, OK, fair enough. We will only take money from people with more than 100,000 in the account, which is a couple of percent of the population. So 98% of the population went, oh, OK, we're good then. We're all right. Yeah, just do that then. And it was, for me, I believe it was a psychological trick that they played. They did that deliberately. To provide that anxiousness and fear originally, and then to provide, if you like, the solution and the relief so that when they robbed blind.
Really interesting, Keith. Do you know, that's really interesting. And for our listeners who might not know what happened, we're going back a few years ago now. The Cypriot government said we can't pay our debts to the European 2013. Union. 2013, we can't pay the European Central Bank. We can't pay the European Union. We're going to have to do a one-off hit on everyone's bank accounts. Now, funnily enough, Ed Conway, who's a Sky News economics editor, at the beginning of the scamdemic, he suggested this. He had the balls to suggest this would be a good idea in the future to pay for COVID.
The other thing, they did that. I don't want to lose my train of thought. But what they actually took from people was absolutely disgusting. There were people who'd, for example, sold their house in the UK, moved over to Cyprus, were renting, got money in the bank, just transferred it, lost a lot. There was the worst story I know of. I think it was a Greek airline. There was a crash in the Greek mountains. Not quite sure. They think the pilots passed out, whatever. And there was some children who were orphaned, and they were paid compensation because of that crash. The parents died in the plane crash. And so they had funds in a bank account. The government took that. So horror stories.
Keith, can I ask you? Can I ask you to clarify?
I could give endless.
Can I ask you to clarify that? Yeah. For, if you don't mind, you said that back in 2013. So expats maybe sold property in the UK and had money transferred into their new Cypriot bank account, and you said that in some cases it was all taken. Now, I'm not for a moment saying that you're lying at all, but I'm staggered. How did they get away with that?
Anything above, any bank account above, any amount above 100,000 euros was stripped, was taken.
Not a percentage of it, but the entire amount.
No. Anything above. So if you had 101,000.
Oh, excuse me. Yes.
If you had 150,000, they would take 50,000.
I'm slow today. My apologies.
Yeah.
Yes, and that completely cleaned people out then.
Oh, absolutely.
Lost half their money in some cases. Lost three quarters of their money.
No, so you'd be left with the 100,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Or But I personally know people who've lost, 6-7 figures. But what they did immediately after that, I'm sure many of your listeners are aware of, you know, and you can corroborate this, you can check this. Very, very quickly across the whole of Europe and in many other countries, they passed legislation to identify bank depositors as bank creditors, which is a very different legal category. So effectively, you as a depositor, you think, well, I'm depositing their storage unit for my money. And what they did was they passed legislation to say, no, you're a creditor. You've lent the money to the bank. So if a bank fails or if there's a thing, then you're on the line of creditors to be paid because they owe you the money. They're not storing your money, which is a very different category. And they passed that legislation very quickly. So, which enables them to do this cash capture.
Why wasn't there much more of a protest from people in Cyprus? This is the thing, because I was in London at the time this happened.
Because I think it was an absolutely psychological game.
The few.
Because what they did was they said everyone's getting hit. So, of course, everyone was up in arms.
Yeah.
And then they said, no, we're only going to touch, you know your neighbour who's a millionaire and you hate him because he's got a better car than you have.
Yes.
Right? So, well, we're only going to take it off him. So everyone goes, well, good then.
Short-sighted people, Keith.
Because it's a very small percentage of people. It's human nature. You know, we have envy towards people who are more successful or have more money in the bank, whatever. So they effectively changed the goalposts, which gave the relief, almost a euphoria and a relief. Go, oh, thank goodness, you know, they're not taking my money. Oh,
yeah.
Well, they're taking it off the guy who's got a BMW, his wife drives a Range Rover, fair enough then, because they don't deserve that. So I believe it was a psychological trick. I think that they knew exactly what they're doing, and what they did in the end was what they always planned. They didn't change their mind. They did a setup, and then gave everyone a relief. Oh good, I'm fine. And then just robbed the people and everyone went, well, I don't care. They have too much money anyway. They've still got 100,000. Why should I care?
Really short-sighted people. Really short-sighted people who couldn't see that, well, if they do it to them, it's inevitable it's going to happen to me at some stage.
Oh, absolutely. But as I say, I'm sure you're aware of this, that the legislation was passed very quickly throughout the whole of Europe and other places to change the status of bank depositors to bank creditors. But just very quickly tell you about the so if you like, Cyprus was almost like a testing ground for that. because the whole bank crash initially started here because Cyprus were actually coerced to buy Greek bonds, and it's the Greek bonds that they bought that crashed the Cyprus economy. It wasn't the Cyprus economy. The Cyprus economy is very strong. They were coerced by the EU to put money into the Greek bonds, which obviously Greece collapsed. Cyprus was on the hook for the Greek, so that destroyed. It was a knock-on, but Cyprus was coerced into and pushed into, you know, support Greece. You have historical ties, et cetera, But very, very quickly, I'm taking up far too much of your time, and nobody wants to.
It's very interesting, Keith. This, go ahead.
No, but I just want to very, very quickly touch on COVID. People talking about Spain, what's happening there, and again, Cyprus is sort of like a little testing ground. There's only in the Republic of Cyprus, there's only maybe 850,000 people, but they've been very, very coercive, very manipulative here. Where I work, they introduced well over a year ago. They said you must 20% of your workforce has to test every week. And I took umbrage with my boss, and he said, "Look, I understand you don't want the jab, but what's wrong with the test?" I said, "You'll see, you will see." So that this ran for quite a while, and then they introduced you must be tested every 72 hours to go to work.
Jesus.
Initially this was a free test, and then because they weren't getting the uptake that they wanted, they said if you've been jabbed, you get free tests. If you've not been jabbed, now you have to pay. And they reduced it then to 48 hours. Now, because you can't get tested in a private clinic on a Sunday or even a Saturday afternoon, that meant that people were being pushed to test four times a week. I was being pushed to test four times a week to go to work. Okay, it was only €5 a time, you know, but it's costing me, four times, 4 weeks, 16, €80. Just to go to work. But if you'd been jabbed, those tests were absolutely free.
And you held out then, Keith. You obviously held out. You weren't getting jabbed under any circumstances.
No, it's never going to happen. But there are workarounds. I'm not going to discuss those on the radio.
No, I understand, yeah.
With everybody. But there are workarounds. But now they're slowly relaxing. They're now actually allowing you to walk into a supermarket without a test. So, and I used to walk into the supermarket and the people were there, show me let me scan your safe pass.
I didn't know this. Hang on now. This is really interesting and shocking to me. I didn't realise that Cyprus... Yeah. Went as far as asking people to show a pass to get into the supermarket. I didn't realise that.
I said because we're sort of on the peripheral, we're tiny.
Yeah.
You know, we're a tiny little dot. But I used to watch with amusement, possibly the wrong word, the Spanish situation, which was because of the... You know, millions of tourists going to Spain and thousands of expats in Spain, and Spain's got a population of close to 50 million, I think. So it's a huge thing. And I used to watch going, oh my goodness, they're upset about that. Don't come to Cyprus. But we're tiny, as I say, 850,000 people. But the measures here were far more draconian, and they still continue now. But I used to stop and say to the guy that, on the door, I said, look, okay, you're checking my test. There's a lady here behind me with two children. She has to buy food for her family. You will refuse her entry into a food shop? I don't speak English. Okay.
Right.
Well, he did a minute ago. And my wife used to pull the wrist. Keith, stop doing this. You know, you can get into it. It's horrific. It has been horrific.
Well, you're touching on something very important there. Again, it's the willingness of presumably decent people to do terrible things. Like when all of this was going on and people were snitching on their neighbours, it was mentioned a few times on the programme about how people did things in Germany. People that were, you know, up to that point ordinary, you know, fairly unassuming people. You're talking about something that's very important here. The guy in the supermarket, You know, he should be absolutely appalled and horrified at the prospect of asking to see somebody's health pass to admit them to the supermarket. And yet, he isn't. He goes along with it. And that's an important one for people to, you know, to think about. Why did they? And this is why people have obeyed this. Mass formation,
One point on that, which you've just reminded me of, as you say, because obviously the numbers of police officers, there's no way they can cover everywhere. So again, it's a manipulation. For example, where I work, if I was caught without a mask, without a test, I would face an instant fine of €300. But my boss, because he's not checked and covered and done his policing, he would be hit with a fine of €3,000. So what it did was it created an environment where your employer is now, if you like, the enforcer and the policeman and the investigator for the government, because they don't have the numbers of people to be going around policing this. So they effectively, you've got very good people who are business owners suddenly put in a position where they become enforcement officers, under personal jeopardy. And because of the personal jeopardy they feel, they're putting in positions on people, which they would never normally do we're all human, we all have good nature. So they were the ones who were actually, rounding us all up, where's your papers? We need a record of this. You've got to file this every day. You've got to email this into the company. We need a record of this. So, as you say, it's making very good people do very horrible things.
And can I ask you this just before I take another call, Keith? Under duress. Very quickly, if you don't mind, we saw fairly large protests in the UK against the restrictions. If memory serves, and I haven't looked it up, but if memory serves, the capital it's not Nicosia. Is that the capital of Cyprus?
Yeah, it's Nicosia. That's correct.
Nicosia. So were there protests in Nicosia at the height of the restrictions?
There were, but very... I went to one. I live in Paphos, which is about the fourth largest place. But you're talking hundreds. You're not talking thousands. Cypriots tend to be... I don't want to denigrate the Cypriot population. I've lived here for nearly 20 years. I love the people. I love the culture. But they're very more, very passé, very docile in these terms. So there are movements over here, but not that you would expect.
Not much momentum behind them.
Of Paris.
Keith, thanks for calling in, mate. Lovely to meet you. And thanks for that information. Really interesting and important. Thanks so much.
No, it's a pleasure. I love your show. I watch it as much as I possibly can. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Keith. Thank you. Keith in Cyprus there, he said Paphos, I think he said. It was Nicosia. I didn't look that up, honest to God. It's just an old football thing, remembering capital cities around Europe and elsewhere. It's 29 minutes past the hour. It's flown by since we got over the little technical glitch a little bit earlier on in the programme. Here are the contact details for the programme.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's +44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
You can do that. You can talk to me now. And I was going to do something there, wasn't I? I was going to do something important. What was I going to do? Yes, I was going to honour my pledge to read the comments. Yes, that's what I'm going to do now, because I did say that in the previous phone-in programmes, I'd not so much forgotten, but got wrapped up in the calls and not read out the comments as I should be doing, because I invite them and you take the time to leave them. So the least I can do is read them out. So I'm getting back into them, and I'm taking a fair bit of flack for my ignorance when it comes to trees, because apparently the monkey puzzle tree is a real tree. A real one. Now listen, don't start that shite. I did say, didn't I, in my defence, that I haven't a clue. I know nothing about trees, about gardening, about flora and flora. I know a little bit about animals, but I never heard of it. And you've been describing it to me. So let me read out a few of these comments. It's richieallen.co.uk if you didn't want to come on the programme. And let me have a look. Chris says mass formation. You both said it as I and many others did. That's what explains people going along with the patently absurd, the patently insane, you know, as a caller said earlier on. Going, it was Sean, wasn't it, in Spain who said it. The madness of going into a pub with a mask on your face, but then sitting down, removing the mask, eating and drinking and making merry with your friends and those in your company, getting up from your chair and putting a mask on. Why wouldn't that strike somebody as being fucking ridiculous? Why wouldn't it? Like, why wouldn't you say that's ludicrous that the virus is going to give my table, you know, a bit of a wide berth and it's going to wait for me to get up and go to the bar or to the toilet, so I better put the mask on. Stuff like that. Mass formation. Pandora has shared a clip about bank confiscations or bail-ins, which I've been predicting even before Ed Conway of the Times newspaper and Sky News, even before he mooted the idea as a way of paying back the COVID debt. I've been saying it for many years because I watched Cyprus closely. I covered Greece. Again, I got hammered for not supporting Jeremy Corbyn. You should have seen the abuse that I got back in 2014 when I said that Alexis Tsipras, the Greek president or prime minister president, and his partner in crime, Yanis Varoufakis, the economics professor turned Greek finance minister, a guy who looks a bit like Herman Munster. I said those two guys were Trojan horses, that they were liars, that they would never default on the illegal debt, on the fake debt, the debt that Greece didn't really owe the European Union. I said these bastards are lying. They are leading their people up the garden path. What did Tsipras do? I am amazed that he isn't in hiding somewhere in Central America in a jungle with Greek people following him with guns and grenades and pitchforks. What did the bastard Tsipras do? The traitor, who should be, as I said, running screaming for his life. He said to the Greek people, I don't want to accept the bailout terms of the European Union. Put it to a referendum. And he told the Greek people to reject the terms on offer from the European Union. The Greek people believed Alexis Tsipras and that bastard Herman Munster of an economics minister. And they voted to tell the European Union, the European Central Bank and the IMF and everybody else to fuck off. What did Tsipras do and Varoufakis? They went back to Brussels and they signed away the future of Greece anyway. How did they get away with it? People like me were screaming bloody murder. Bloody murder. What Greece should do is again stick its fingers up to the European Union, get rid of the euro instantaneously, reintroduce the drachma, devalue the fucking bejesus out of it, and open Greece up to Britain, to Ireland, to Scandinavia, and say we're open for business now. That's what they should have done. I spent a lifetime trying to explain to people, not just on this show, but in my personal life, what the European Union is. It is a cartel controlled by the biggest globalists, the biggest businesses on planet Earth, dreamt up after the failure of petrochemical giant companies to control Europe by planting Hitler in Berlin, having won the Second World War by planting Hitler as the ruler of Europe, but he would have been in name only, these companies then would have carved up the spoils of the continent. That's what was all about the Second World War. I'm summing this up now in very simple absolutes, I suppose, but it's a fact. The failure of these petrochemical oil and money giants to succeed with Hitler, it was out of that failure that the European Union was born. How do we get to rape and pillage the continent if there are 28 or 30 or 35, depending on countries joining Europe? How do we get to control the continent if we have to negotiate with 28 different sovereign governments? The answer is we can't do that. It's impossible. So we better get them to sign up to a union. Now, again, this sounds very simplistic and very almost childish, but every word of it is true. And what the European Union did then to pilfer the resources, the real wealth of European countries, was it got them to take massive loans for redevelopment projects in their countries, like rebuilding roads, motorways, highways, all sorts of things, infrastructure and whatnot. And of course, countries were never meant to be able to pay back these loans. Loans which never really existed, because the loans were basically money invented out of thin air. The money was loaned into existence. It's numbers on a screen. The banks took no risk. Countries took the money, the fake money, paid it to people to build their projects and build their roads. Those countries could never pay back those debts because the interest was never created at the same time. The principle was, that's the essence of fractional reserve banking There's another term they use for it which isn't so important now. And of course, when the countries couldn't pay back, that's when the vultures come into town. This hasn't just happened, of course, in Europe. It's happened around the world. You should read a book by John Perkins called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It details perfectly how countries who are doing fairly okay, thank you very much, are coerced into taking money from the World Bank, the IMF and so on, so that they can be defaulted, effectively, so that they can be brought down by their inability to pay back those loans and that money. And it's at that point that the gangsters say, well, don't worry about it. We'll take your forestries. We'll take your water supply. We'll take everything of any real value that was publicly owned, not privately owned, publicly owned, particularly in Central America and South America, owned by the people and operated for the people. We'll take that stuff now and we'll carve it up. I read somewhere today that transport companies in this whoring country that we call the UK made £500 million last year overcharging people to take trains, mostly trains it must be said, and to use buses and trams and to use undergrounds. We've only got a couple of undergrounds here in the UK, don't we? Private companies. Thatcher started this shit, selling off the family jewels, everything that should be publicly owned. And this is not socialism. This is Christianity. The people should own everything. Everything. Transport, water, utilities, heat, light should be owned by the fucking people and run for the fucking people. Cheaply. And any little bit of profit that comes out of it should be spent on other projects for the people, education and whatnot. £500 million. The profits are astronomical. And poor bastards are being charged thousands of pounds a year in England for so-called season tickets. Do you know that, dear listener, if you're not in the UK? people who can't drive into London because they're not allowed, congestion charges and all the rest of it, who've got to take trains every working day that they work in a year, 47 weeks of the year, whatever it is, and they have to pay thousands of pounds to these corporations who now control transport because, I've never said the C word on air, I'll never say it now, because people like Thatcher sold it to them. All these arguments. And you know, you'll still get dickheads who'll go on television and radio and say that when the state ran stuff, it was run so badly, you could never get a train, there was never enough carriages, there were never enough employees and all of that shit. But of course, what I say to them now, and I said it to them years ago, when they used to debate me, I said, well, you see, they deliberately ran it down into the fucking ground. Deliberately ran it down, Thatcher and her pals, so that people would cry, this is problem, reaction, solution, so that people would say, Jesus, the transport is shit in this country. Yeah, that's because they ran it into the ground, withheld investment from it, left it go to rack and ruin, so that people would accept privatisation. Oh yeah, let the private sector run it, yeah, well, they can't do a worse job than the government. That's an old bugbear of mine. Yeah, I saw that today. I've got to double check that, lest I be giving you incorrect information. But something to the tune, I might have read it in the Times, of £500 million going to corporations that were given, gift-wrapped, for pennies on the pound, the running and the control of the transport networks by Thatcher. And when Blair got in 1997 and his cronies, well, they took up the reins and they did it on steroids too. That was a timely intervention, that, because the old phone system is on the blink again, sadly, but we're getting there anyway. It says 17 minutes to the top of the hour. This is Blondie. Is it from Parallel Lines, this? It might be. Blondie and One Way or Another. You know, I'm sick to death. Not anymore, I'm not, because I've gotten over it. But I used to get very angry in the 90s and in the early noughties when people lied about socialism and tried to equate socialism with the notion of taking money away from people who had, you know, maybe built up their own business, maybe, and had made some money for themselves and owned a house or two. What the media did and politics did over a period of decades was lie about the fundamental principles of socialism, to demonise the concept in the minds of populations all over the world. And they did this by convincing people that socialists wanted to tax the living shit out of people just because they were wealthy. You know, for spite, like, to hammer people. Now, you might say, you're full of shit, Richie. I've been listening to Jeremy Corbyn in recent years and Diane Abbott and people like that. These are not socialists. You know, demanding that, you know, people who earn over £70,000 a year or £50,000 a year, whatever it is, you know, should be squeezed and pay 52% tax and all of that crap. No socialist ever suggested, no real socialist ever suggested doing that. Socialism was never about taking from wealthy people and giving it to less wealthy or to poor people. Never. Socialism worked. That's another lie. They tell you it never worked anywhere in the world. All it caused was chaos. Bullshit. It worked in Chile. It worked in Venezuela. It worked in Argentina. See, the problem is when it does work, and when socialist presidents and prime ministers like Salvador Allende in Chile, when they don't tax the living shit out of the rich people of the country, which he didn't, Salvador Allende made a promise in the late 60s to the factory owners and the business owners of Chile. He said, I'm hardly going to tax you at all. You look after your employees, give them a good wage. They will spend and spend and spend in their towns and in their communities. You look after them, give them a pension, and you'll hardly pay any tax. That's exactly what happened. He nationalised the copper mines. He told the United States of America to fuck off. He took back millions of acres of land that was being held by prospectors overseas. Wankers, non-Chileans. He took it back and he stuck his fingers up at them and said, piss off, you're not Chileans. The land belongs to Chile. And he put Chilean people on the land to farm it. All of this is true. I made a video about this on my first YouTube channel. I'm not bragging, but I'll tell you how important it was. The video had nearly 25 million views. Because I laid out what they did in Chile, what Allende did. How he brought the people up without screwing the aristocrats of the country, without taking their savings and charging them 52% tax or 60% tax. Look it up. I think there's another version of it on YouTube, on the second YouTube channel. All of it completely true. What happens then? What happens when guys like Allende come along? What happens when guys like Hugo Chavez comes along? Well, that's when the International Monetary Fund, that's when countries like the United States and Britain and France and others get together and sanction those countries. Sanction them. Tell them, well, you can't sell your copper, or in the case of Venezuela, you can't sell your oil, just because... because they're running their country in a way they don't like, because they don't want people in the United States of America or in Britain or in France or anywhere else seeing how it could work. How you could have no poverty. How everybody could be doing really well. And if wealthy people want to be wealthy and have big fucking houses in the Hamptons and drive Ferraris, if that's what gives you pleasure in life, you can do that too. That's how it worked in Chile. This isn't idealism now. This is a fact. It's a stone cold fact. Why do you think he was murdered? Allende. September the 11th, 1971. Why do you think they came after him? Why do you think they came after Chavez? Because they couldn't allow everyone else in the world to see this is how it could be. People just living in relative prosperity with no debt, very little poverty. Nobody going hungry. The resources of the country put to work on behalf of the people of the country and for the betterment of the country. That's what socialism was. It was never about taking stuff from people who had the initiative and the enterprise and the smarts and the know-how to go and do their own business. Never. That's what Allende said to people. You're doing well. You've got 60 people working in that factory. You're flying there. Pay them. Look after them. You won't have anything to worry from me. I don't want your money. We'll use the copper of the country. We'll use the farmland of the country to generate money. We'll give zero interest loans to people who need loans. We'll raise the education standards of the country. I've done all this before, but not for a long time. That's what socialism is. But they've perverted the term. And people don't understand what it is. They see Diane Abbott and Corbyn, and John McDonnell, even Keir Starmer, they say there's a socialist. Bollocks. There's another label for them. Social Democrat is the label they give them. It's all labels, but they're not socialists. Jeremy Corbyn's manifesto, 2019, when he got hammered by Johnson, there was no socialism in there. None in that manner. Anyway, look, I'm ranting on too much about it. I've done this too many times before, but it's important that people know their history. They always tell you people, you know, I'll get an email tomorrow. Ah, Richie, these people, you know, Chavez in Venezuela and his successor, Nicolas Maduro. Look what happens, Richie. You know, inflation goes through the roof and these people end up with no food in the supermarkets and it all goes belly up because of socialism. But they lie. They lie. They don't tell you that the country is swindled. The Bank of England has hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars worth of Venezuelan gold. They don't tell you that they sanction the country. They prevent it exporting. They prevent it importing. That's what they do. All is not fair in love and war, you know. If they left Venezuela alone, Venezuela would thrive. But people can't know that. It's very important. They never learn that. That socialism is not about taking from the successful man with a brain or the successful woman with a brain who pumped his or her money into their business and built it up. It's not about taking from them and giving it to people for the hell of it. It never was. I've said it before. Socialists never supported the European Union. Socialists never supported opening the doors to a country where there were finite semi-skilled jobs to begin with. Socialists never supported opening the doors to a semi-skilled workforce from other countries. No socialist ever supported that. Ever. And now you have this vaudevillian spectre of a party that claims to be a socialist party, the Labour Party, and of course it isn't. It's a controlled group of puppets, just like the Tories and the Lib Dems. But you have these people claiming to be socialists, arguing that we should open the doors to the country and let every Ukrainian that wants to come in, let them come in. Let everybody in. Let them all in. At a time when manufacturing jobs and semi-skilled jobs are at a premium in this country to begin with. No socialist ever agreed with that. I went to meetings when I was much younger with genuine socialists arguing against the Lisbon Treaty and the Nice Treaty, arguing that Ireland should leave the European Union because an open-door policy was bound to be devastating for the indigenous population in terms of their prospects in getting a decent job and keeping it and buying a house, or if they couldn't buy a house, getting an affordable local authority house. Socialists were arguing against that. It's so ironic. These days, the so-called alternative right, which is demonised constantly in the media for criticising migration policies or immigration policies. It's amazing to me that those in the alt-right that have to put up with these accusations of xenophobia have so much in common with the original left socialists. I'm an old socialist. I don't want to tax people at all, let alone tax some fucker just because he was clever enough to make a business for himself. No chance. What I would do in the morning is nationalise everything. Close the banks. Kick them the fuck out of the country. We can invent money out of thin air by ourselves, you know. We don't need you gangsters to do it. Get them the fuck out of the country. Close the doors to unskilled migration. Just close the doors to it. I'm sorry, for the moment. People seeking asylum are running from war or genuine oppression. 100% will do our bit, absolutely. But low-skilled work migration, no thanks. Not for the moment. We'll call you when we need you. There's enough to be done now for the people in this country. All of these bullshit European Union laws about farming, the agreements made that land wouldn't be farmed, fuck that, farming would begin again. Put tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people to work. People who didn't fancy the education system. Let's get you on the land. Paid well. In good conditions. Get you back to work. Let's feed ourselves. Organic food. No pesticides, of course. I'm fantasizing now. I'm dreaming. I'm ranting. No debt. No sickness. Disband the NHS. Get rid of it. Complementary healing. Oh, yeah. If you made me king tomorrow, it'd be a terrible place altogether, wouldn't it, really, listening to that bollocks I just said there? That's it for me. Before the old voice goes, closing out with a tune, I suppose. Glad we got to get a few calls. I'll have to get the communication system sorted out. Glad we got a few calls on. They were very interesting, every one of them. I'm back with you on Sunday morning for the other show. That's Sunday Morning Melodies. Do join me then at 10 o'clock UK time Sunday morning. Until then, enjoy your weekend and thanks for listening this week. Bye.